regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Great to have you with us on the program today. We are a week away now from the South Carolina primary. This is going to be the last primary that does not feature Michael Bloomberg on the ballot. His strategy is to wait for Super Tuesday because he was so late getting into the presidential campaign. And then his hope is that he can rack up enough delegates on Super Tuesday to either blunt Bernie Sanders' momentum and destroy Joe Biden's chances of becoming the establishment candidate. At the worst case scenario, he's hoping to at least collect enough delegates that he can maybe take this to a contested convention. And the gloves are coming off. You know, this is a knockdown, a drag out primary fight, largely, again, between Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders. I think we're going to see what happens in South Carolina next Tuesday. Joe Biden desperately, second place isn't going to be good enough for Biden. If he comes in second, he's done. If he has a commanding win in South Carolina, there's probably new life to his campaign. If he narrowly defeats Bernie Sanders, the questions are going to linger, but so will the Biden campaign. But right now, Bloomberg is almost ignoring Biden, although we'll see what happens during the debate Tuesday night. Online, anyway, Bloomberg has been attacking Sanders and has been attacking Sanders on gun control. This was one of several tweets yesterday. What Bernie says, special interests are bad. What Bernie means, special interests are bad, except the one time the NRA got me elected to Congress. Now, first of all, let's just talk about the rich irony of the anti-gun billionaire who just spent, was it over $3 million in the Virginia legislative races and plans on spending at least $8 million in Texas this cycle as part of Every Town for Gun Safety, the gun control group that he funds, bashing any sort of special interest spending. But there you go. Hubris, thy name is Bloomberg. What's fascinating about this is that really there's no real difference between the Democrats, any of them, when it comes to gun control. Bloomberg has spent more money because he has more money. But virtually every candidate that's going to be on the debate stage on Tuesday night wants to ban the most commonly produced rifle in America today, want to establish some sort of universal background check system, which would require a universal firearms registration system. Most of them are in favor of some sort of gun licensing regime, whether it is a new federal gun license, as Bloomberg has proposed, or incentivizing states to establish a state-level gun licensing regimes, as Joe Biden has proposed. But none of them are a fan of your right to keep and bear arms. In fact, I don't believe that any of them actually believes that the Heller case was rightfully decided. So I don't think anybody on that stage believes that you actually have a right to keep and bear arms. They think it is a privilege. They think it is something that can be doled out by the government as opposed to a pre-existing right that is protected by the government. And so they're arguing over who the most anti-gun candidate is. Is it Bernie Sanders? Is it Michael Bloomberg? Here's something that I find really interesting. And there have been a couple of stories that have sort of hinted at this. Back in the fall, right before Bloomberg got in, maybe it was right after Bloomberg got in, the BuzzFeed News had a story about how not every gun control advocate was really excited to see Michael Bloomberg as a candidate. The South Florida Sun Sentinel had a story a few days ago about some of the March for Our Lives founders who are supporting Bernie Sanders. But if you spend any time online, you will pick this up, especially if you are looking at both sides on social media. If you're looking at what the gun control advocates are saying and you're looking at what Second Amendment advocates are saying, you realize pretty quickly that there is just not a lot of support for Michael Bloomberg among gun control activists, which I find fascinating. Now, listen, to be fair, he is getting the support of some of them. I don't know that Shanna Watts has officially come out and endorsed him, but she sure isn't saying a bad word about him. Lori Haas, who is a gun control activist in Virginia. Her daughter was wounded at the Virginia Tech shooting. She came out and endorsed Michael Bloomberg. But I want you to take a look at some of the tweets that I found online from some gun control activists, including, again, some of the folks who are responsible for March for Our Lives. Now, listen, these are folks, even though they're not backing Michael Bloomberg, they're not backing Donald Trump either. These are not all of a sudden, you know, gun control activists who decided, oh, you know what, I like the Second Amendment. No, these are gun control activists who say, I don't like Michael Bloomberg. And I think that's newsworthy, don't you? So let's start with Cameron Caskey, one of the founders of March for Our Lives. Now, this is a two-part tweet. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Michael Bloomberg. Here we go. Cameron Caskey, at 78, Bernie Sanders is too old to be president. We need somebody young and fresh like Mike Bloomberg, who is 78. That wasn't the two-parter. Here's the two-parter, a meme from Cameron Caskey. Bernie's 2020 gun safety platform, pretty much everybody else's. Bloomberg needs you to find the difference between this picture and this picture. Now, this is part two, by the way. Here's the punchline. It's from The Office. There you go. They're the same picture. It's not just Cameron Caskey, however. If it were just, you know, one guy, that probably wouldn't be worth covering. But there are a lot of gun control activists who are vocally speaking out, not just in support of Bernie Sanders, but against Mike Bloomberg. And those are two different things. Alex Wynn, another one of the founders of March for Our Lives, with a tweet. First, Bloomberg hitting Bernie Sanders. I've been the NRA's number one enemy for decades. Bernie's been the NRA buddy for decades. Who do you want to represent the Democrat Party? Now, the news story, this one from, I believe, the New York Post, Michael Bloomberg gave $250,000 to boost a candidate with an A-plus NRA rating. Again, if you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, you're looking at Mike Bloomberg, you're saying, listen, you used to be a Republican. What are you talking about boosting the NRA? You were backing A-rated candidates for the NRA, even while you were stumbling for gun control because you were a Republican. Which is, you know, it's a fair point. I mean, listen, I think Bloomberg is an authoritarian. I don't think Bloomberg is a Democrat or a Republican or certainly not a libertarian. He's an authoritarian. That's what he is. And he has become a part of whatever party he believes will give him the best opportunity to win whatever political office he's seeking. That's why he became a Republican in the first place. Before he was a Republican candidate for mayor, he was a registered Democrat. And you know, listen, as I said, I don't think there's a bit of daylight between Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden and Mike Bloomberg. And I guess Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar are still in, and Elizabeth Warren, too. There's no daylight between any of them when it comes to gun control. Michael Bloomberg talks about Bernie Sanders being the NRA's buddy. You don't have a buddy if you're a gun owner and a Second Amendment supporter. You don't have a buddy in the Democratic primary. And you likely already know this, but it's just absurd to see Bloomberg out there characterizing Bernie Sanders as, you know, some sort of Second Amendment stalwart based on some votes back in the 1990s. As Stephen Gutowski of the Washington Free Beacon has pointed out, certainly since 2016, Bernie Sanders has towed the line when it comes to gun control efforts. He has not strayed off of the party's path, nor do I think that he would be. Someone who would stray from the party's anti-gun agenda if he were elected president. I think he's embraced it and adopted it as his own. Now, I heard from Cameron Caskey, heard from Alex Wynn. Delaney Tarr is another founder of A March for Our Lives. This was her response to Team Bloomberg tweeting out examples of vandalism to their offices. Eat the Rich painted on their office in Flint, Michigan. Delaney Tarr says, wow, that just has to be the worst thing that's ever happened in Flint. Nothing else. Speaking, of course, about the Flint water crisis, it's been noted that if Michael Bloomberg had spent the $450 million that he spent on his presidential campaign to date on fixing the water system in Flint, that he could have fixed the water system in Flint. I would also note as well, as long as we're spending other people's money, Bloomberg, the gun safety champion, right? Bloomberg could actually have built an indoor range in every county of the United States for about $16 billion, average cost of $2 million a range. $16 billion. He's worth $60 billion. He could have been the Andrew Carnegie of ranges, just as the industrialists built public libraries across the country in the early part of the 20th century. Michael Bloomberg could have built ranges across the country to ensure, hell, he could have spent several million more dollars to staff them, to ensure that people could get actual gun safety training and education. But that's not what he's doing. That's not what he's interested in. He's a gun control guy. He's not a gun safety guy. Finally, we have this from Julie is Delightful on Twitter, a Moms Demand Action volunteer down in Florida, Julie Gehring. A guide to canvassing for Elizabeth Warren with my Moms Demand friends. Wear the gun sense gear. Display the Warren clipboard. Have a solid navigator. Knock doors and chat with voters. Have fun walking and talking with friends. So again, another example of the inability for Michael Bloomberg to get the support of gun control activists. Now, again, you would think that would be his natural base of support, given the time and the money that he has spent on this issue over the years. But not only, again, are they not just sitting there quiet, many of them are vocally objecting to the idea of a Michael Bloomberg candidacy. Now, again, I host Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I'm the editor of Bearing Arms. I point this out, and people are just going to say, wow, shut up, gun nut. Listen, if you're a reporter for Politico or for The Daily Beast or for BuzzFeed or for The Hill or for some other, you know, supposedly nonpartisan news outlet, this is a good story. You should run with it. You should try to get some of these folks on record about why it is that they're not backing Michael Bloomberg, the gun sense candidate, quote unquote, because I do find it fascinating. And I can tell you that just based on some conversations that I have had with folks on the other side of the issue about their presidential candidate preference, I don't think this issue goes away for Michael Bloomberg. In fact, I think if Bloomberg somehow manages to get the nomination, you may very well see gun control advocates do something like hold a press conference to announce their opposition, to say that they're either not voting or they're going to vote third party. Or that is the level of distaste and disdain that Michael Bloomberg has among some of these gun control advocates. Again, not all of them. Some of them love them, but many of them don't. And when you think about all of the resources that Bloomberg has devoted, ostensibly to attract support from this group, you should ask why. And I'll give you a little hint, by the way. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but based on the conversations that I've had, there are some gun control advocates who simply don't believe that Bloomberg really cares much about this issue. There was a mailer that was sent around showing it was a photograph of a vigil. And on the front of it was just a quote from Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg wasn't at the vigil. Bloomberg may have funded the vigil. But again, it was this emotionally evocative imagery. And I do believe that there is a sense among some gun control advocates that Bloomberg doesn't really care as deeply about this issue as he lets on. That this may have been no more than an effort to attract a mailing list. And to try to get a natural base of support, as opposed to being really truly invested in this issue. Now, again, these are folks who are not going to vote for a pro Second Amendment candidate, but we as gun owners watching this, yeah, pass the popcorn, absolutely, because it's fascinating. But beyond that, you know, we do need to start thinking about, if you're not already thinking about what you're going to do to help ensure that Second Amendment candidates are elected this November from the presidential level on down, now's the time to get started. I know it's early. You know, we haven't even had the presidential primary in the state of Virginia yet. That's coming up on March the 4th. But it's really not too early to start getting involved in a local congressional campaign or to start working with the NRA or Second Amendment Foundation or your state organization, Gun Owners of America. But to get involved and to get engaged, and there are really, I think, again, two groups that we need to be focused on, right? We need to be focused primarily on making sure that gun owners are getting out and voting. In Virginia, I can tell you, last November, our turnout, particularly in rural areas, was meh. It was meh. It was below 40% in a lot of counties. It's not good enough. We see what happens when we don't get out and vote. You have bills introduced that would strip people of their right to keep and bear arms, would turn them into felons for simply continuing to possess things that they already own. It turns a right into a privilege. And by the way, it does nothing to address violent crime or suicide. We know that's what happens if we don't get out and vote. So there's your motivator. Whether you live in Virginia or you live in Washington State or Arizona or Texas, there are plenty of examples that we cover on Bearing Arms each and every day about these gun control bills that are coming. They're already being introduced to the state level. If we have an anti-gun majority in Congress and an anti-gun president in the White House, we all will be dealing with these pieces of legislation. And yes, we can say, well, look, Trump's done very good with judges on the courts, and maybe that will save us. You know what would save us even more? Not having to go through that in the first place. So the first group of people we need to be talking to are those gun owners. Are you registered to vote? Are you going to go out and vote? You got to get out there and vote. Even if you don't like a particular candidate, there are going to be other names on the ballot. There are going to be other races. So don't stay home. We can't afford to have you stay home. That other group, though, they're the persuadables. They're the folks who are on the fence right now, who may be soft supporters of gun control, but only because they haven't really thought much about the issue. Those are the people that Bloomberg will be targeting in the general election, as well as Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren, whoever wins the Democratic nomination. They will be targeting their gun control message at those persuadables. And if they use the Every Town playbook that they used in Virginia and the one that they're planning on using in Texas, they will be targeting not every persuadable, not every person on the fence out there, but they'll be focusing their efforts in the suburbs of you know, most of our major American cities. They will be focusing their efforts primarily on women, moms primarily, and they're not going to get into a policy discussion. We as gun owners, we know these policies in and out, right? And so we can talk about, okay, red flag law. Well, let's talk about the problems with red flag laws. The campaign ads that are going to be cut, the messages to those persuadable voters are going to feature very little policy and a lot of rhetoric about we need to protect our children. You shouldn't be afraid to send your kid to school. We can do better. The gun lobby is getting in the way. Things like that. Real simple phrasing. And one of the challenges is to come up with messages that can counter that rhetoric. Because, again, I think as gun owners, we like to delve into the substantive stuff. Right? It seems cheap to relegate a right to and the exercise of a right to who comes up with a better catchphrase. But I can tell you that's going to be a part of our messaging is coming up with those really short, simple messages about why they're wrong, why their plans won't make anybody safer, why their plans won't make you feel any better, and why they won't improve public safety. And there are some ways to do that. And I tell you what, maybe later in the week, I want to, you know, so we're going to be coming to you from CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, Thursday and Friday of this week. Tomorrow on the program, Dave Adams of the Virginia Shooting Sports Association is going to be with us. We've got another legislative update out of Virginia. But later in the week, I'm going to be surrounded by some pretty smart people. And this is something that I want to explore, is what would your messaging strategies be for those persuadables? Again, we know what the messaging strategies are to turn out the base, to turn out gun owners. But what are those messages that can resonate with that suburban mom who doesn't own a gun, or maybe she does, but she rarely ever goes to the range? And she sees the headlines and she sees the stories and she's worried about her kid. What is the message that we can deliver that is honest, that is truthful, that is pithy about why Bloomberg's plans or why Sanders' plans or why Biden's plans aren't the answer? We'll get into that later on in the week. I tell you what, right now, though, let's get to our armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivism report as well. All right, so we will start with our recidivist report from Florida. And a tragic story where a teenager is dead, three other teenagers in custody, after a shooting allegedly during a drug deal. And at least one of the suspects known to police, under Sheriff Roy Henderson in Yulee, Florida, says that Trent Fort was the teenager who was shot and killed. Three teenagers in custody. Charges expected to be filed late on Tuesday. According to the sheriff's office, the teen who was killed was in a car with four other teenagers, stopped at a stop sign. It was about 4:30 Monday afternoon when he got into an argument about a drug deal. He was then shot in the chest. One of the other teens called 911 as they drove to West Nassau High School, about 8 minutes away, to meet with a rescue unit. He was rushed to the hospital in Jacksonville, where he later died. Henderson said the victim and the shooter go to school together at West Nassau High. A News 4 in Jacksonville says the teen believed to have pulled the trigger was taken into custody at a local McDonald's. The teen's brother was tracked to a wooded area in a nearby neighborhood. They did find the 9mm handgun involved in the shooting in the woods. The police say that they were called to the wooded area after a domestic call involving the grandfather of one of the teens who had been attacked by one of the teens. Henderson did say that the 17-year-old shooter had a prior gun charge and will be initially charged with violation of probation and will later be charged with murder. So, the most obvious question is here then, what happened with that prior gun charge? Was it a simple slap on the wrist and go on your merry way? What was the charge pled down to? What was the original charge? Again, we'll know more of this, but we hear, again, we hear so many politicians talk about we got to do something to keep, our kids safe. All right, well, look, I don't necessarily think the answer, by the way, is taking a 17-year-old and throwing him in prison for 10 years simply for having a gun. But sounds like something should have happened. More than simple probation. Sounds like this individual probably needed some pretty intensive supervision to try to turn his life around. And that simply didn't happen. And now a young life has been lost. Our armed citizen story from Channel 7 in Omaha, Nebraska, KETV, where police are asking for some help in finding a suspect who brought a knife to a gunfight. Yep. And that would be the guy, bringing shame to all bearded Americans everywhere. According to KETV, surveillance pictures show the man attempted to rob the Mega Saver in Omaha, Nebraska last May. He brought a knife. He went around the corner. Clerk pulled a handgun. Clerk was licensed to carry that handgun there in Nebraska. Suspect ran away, has since been identified as Zachary Penny, 29 years of age. Police know who he is, but they don't know where to find him. And so they are asking for help. Thankfully, in that incident, the fact that the clerk was armed was enough to stop that crime from going any further. Not that, Michael Bloomberg or any of the other Democratic presidential candidates would like that, because they don't believe that you have a right to bear arms. And finally, our good deed of the day from St. Louis, Missouri, KMOV, where a homeless man found a challenge coin belonging to a veteran and ended up turning it in, helping this veteran get back this important memento from his service in the Green Berets. The veteran's name is Henry. He told KMOV he really didn't want his last name used. If you watch the video, you never see Henry's face. It's not about Henry. But Henry had his car broken into, and a number of items were stolen, including the challenge coin that he was given back in 1981 when he became a Green Beret. As KMOV says, he would go on to serve 23 years in the U.S. Army. He would be deployed all over the world. He said when he received this challenge coin, he said back, you know, now challenge coins are pretty common. He said back then they really weren't. He said, you know, you got one when you joined the special forces. And that was it. And he thought it was lost, along with everything else that had been stolen from his car. But over the weekend, a gentleman named Michael Freeman spotted something on the ground right near a drain. And he said, something told me to look down. It was right there at the corner, right there at the drainage sewer. So he picked up the coin, had special forces on one side, had a last name and a first initial of H on the other side. And Freeman said, well, this is valuable. Not necessarily that it's worth money, but it's valuable to somebody. And he said he just knew he had to get it back to its owner. He said, I have family members who've served. So he flagged down a passing police officer, Lieutenant Dan Zarek with the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. He was working a second job, and he started talking to Mr. Freeman. He said, all right, I'll do what I can to help here. So he goes online. He starts doing some digging. Lieutenant Zarek said he had done a police report in St. Louis City back in the 2000s, and the police officer had thought to get his work address and his employer information. So based on that, he was able to get in contact with Henry. They set up a meeting for Monday in which Mr. Freeman and Henry were able to meet, and Michael Freeman was able to return that challenge coin to the former Green Beret. As KMOV reports, after the meeting, Henry took Freeman to lunch so they could talk more. And police made contact with a social service agency to help Michael Freeman get off the streets and get his life back on track. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Michael Freeman, we thank you for your very good deed, and we wish you the best of luck in the future. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program today. Tomorrow, we'll talk a little bit about Tuesday night's Democratic debate. Gun control wasn't mentioned in the last Democratic debate, but I expect it's going to come up tonight. We'll also be hearing from Dave Adams, Legislative Affairs Director for the Virginia Shooting Sports Association. We'll get you another update on all of the gun control bills that are working their way through the Virginia legislature. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Bearing Arms, Cam & Company at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or to Town Hall Media on YouTube. Don't forget as well, you can be a VIP member of BearingArms.com. Get exclusive analysis, commentary, and more. You can do that at BearingArms.com. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow with another brand new edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company.